A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel wrote in with a whole thing about airport terminals. He says they're fascinating precisely because nobody wants to be in them. They're ephemeral. They're full of people who have nothing in common except that they're all stuck. And yet we keep building stranger and stranger things inside them. He wants us to go beyond the classic airport bar and find 10 truly strange facilities that exist airside in specific terminals around the world. So we went hunting.
And what we found is that airports are secretly building the world's strangest civic infrastructure. I mean, genuinely. Some of these things read like someone lost a bet, and then the bet turned into a permanent installation with skate rentals.
That's the thing. The airport bar is the obvious answer, and it's a good answer. Herman, you've made the case before that airport bars get more important as flying gets more miserable. But the real story here is that airports have started competing on amenities. They're not just processing hubs anymore. They're trying to turn a 6-hour layover into something you might actually remember fondly. And that pressure has produced some bizarre results.
Right. And the captive audience is the key. You've got thousands of people who physically can't leave, who have hours to kill, and who are probably in some state of mild anxiety or boredom or both. That's a market. And airports have realized that if they can make the terminal itself a draw, not just the flights, but the terminal, they can shift the economics. More dwell time means more retail revenue. More retail revenue means less dependence on gate fees. So the amenities get weirder and weirder.
So let's start the countdown. We've got 10, from the merely odd to the surreal, and we're going to ask what each one says about the airport as a space.
Number 10 is the swimming pool at Singapore Changi Airport's Terminal 1. This is a rooftop pool open to transit passengers, complete with a jacuzzi and a bar, operating 24/7. It's not hidden away in some first-class lounge. You pay a small fee and you're in. You can be halfway through a 14-hour layover, floating on your back, looking at the runway.
A rooftop pool above a terminal, where you can swim at 3 in the morning if you want.
And Changi treats this as completely normal. It's part of their whole philosophy. They don't think of layovers as downtime. They think of them as a hospitality experience that happens to involve an airplane. The pool is a statement. It says, "We know you're stuck here, but we're going to make you forget that."
There's something almost aggressive about it. Like, yes, you're in transit, but also you're on vacation now. Deal with it.
Number 9. Also Changi, because Changi is cheating. Terminal 3 has a butterfly garden, a living, enclosed garden with over 1,000 butterflies designed as a calming space in the middle of a transit hub. It's got tropical plants, a little waterfall, and butterflies just doing butterfly things, while announcements about gate changes echo in the distance.
The butterfly garden gets me because of the lifespan thing. Butterflies live days, sometimes weeks. The passengers in that garden are there for hours. There's this weird temporal mismatch where the creatures that actually live in the garden full-time have life cycles shorter than some of the layovers passing through it.
I hadn't thought of that. That's strange. The butterflies are the permanent residents and they're dead before the week is out, while a passenger on a Frankfurt to Sydney connection passes through, spends 40 minutes, and never comes back. Who's the transient one?
Both. Neither. The whole thing is a hall of mirrors. Number 8.
Number 8 is the ice rink at Dubai International Airport. Terminal 1, full-size Olympic ice rink, open to all passengers, skate rentals available. This is in Dubai, in a desert. They built an ice rink inside an airport in a city where the outdoor temperature hits 50 degrees Celsius.
That's not an amenity, that's a flex. It's Dubai saying we have so much climate control budget that we're going to freeze a sheet of water inside a building that's surrounded by sand, just because we can.
And it's not a small rink. This is Olympic dimensions. You could hold an actual competition there. Whether anyone has, I'm not sure, but the possibility exists. Imagine you're flying from London to Mumbai. You've got a 4-hour layover in Dubai, and you spend it ice skating. Your brain has no category for that.
The cognitive dissonance is the point. Number 7, and we're staying in Singapore because, again, Changi is playing a different game. The indoor forest at Jewel. Now, Jewel is technically landside, but transit passengers can access it through a dedicated walkway, so I'm counting it. The Rain Vortex is the centerpiece. It's the world's tallest indoor waterfall, 7 stories high, surrounded by a terraced forest with thousands of trees and plants. It's not a garden. It's a forest inside a shopping mall attached to an airport.
The Rain Vortex is spectacular. Water falling from the ceiling of a glass dome, lit at night, and the whole thing is designed to collect rainwater and recirculate it. There's a real engineering logic underneath the spectacle. But the experience is, you've just cleared immigration, you walk through a corridor, and suddenly you're in what looks like the set of a science fiction film where nature has been recreated indoors because the outside is uninhabitable.
Which isn't far from the truth in Singapore, actually. The outside is habitable, but it's extremely hot and humid, so the indoor forest is climate-controlled forest. It's nature, but comfortable.
Number 6. San Francisco International Airport has a dedicated yoga room. This is airside in Terminal 2. Dim lighting, mats, instructions for breathing exercises on the wall. It's designed for the anxious traveler. No shoes, no phones, no announcements. Just a quiet space where you can do a downward dog while your flight gets delayed.
I appreciate the honesty of the yoga room. It's not pretending to be anything else. It's not a forest or a street or an ice rink. It's a room where you go to deal with the fact that air travel is stressful, and the airport has acknowledged that and given you a space to cope. That's almost more radical than the butterfly garden.
There's something very San Francisco about it, too. I can't imagine the yoga room at, say, Frankfurt Airport. It'd be more clinical. SFO's version has a certain Northern California earnestness that I find endearing.
Number 5. Portland International Airport has a free 24-hour movie theater, airside, in the main terminal. Actual theater seating, a screen, classic films playing on a loop. You just walk in and sit down.
Portland's theater is one of my favorites because it's so straightforward. No fee, no membership, no premium access. You're waiting for a flight, you see a theater, you walk in, you watch part of Casablanca. And it's 24 hours, so if your flight is at 2 in the morning, the theater is still running. There's something almost Lynchian about watching a film at 3 a.m. in an airport theater while the terminal outside is nearly empty.
The night shift airport experience is its own category of strange. Everything's half-lit, the shops are shuttered, and there's a movie playing to an audience of 3 people who are all in different time zones internally. Number 4. Detroit Metropolitan Airport, McNamara Terminal. A 2-lane bowling alley with shoe rental.
This one surprised me when I first read about it. Detroit, a bowling alley in the terminal. It's not large. 2 lanes is basically a bowling closet, but it's a real bowling alley. You rent shoes, you pick up a ball, you bowl. The sound of pins getting knocked down while a gate agent is paging someone over the PA system.
The shoe rental is what sells it. If it were just a lane with no shoes, it'd feel like a gimmick. But they make you change into bowling shoes. That's commitment. That's an airport saying, no, we're doing this properly. You'll wear the uncomfortable rental shoes and you'll like it.
Number 3. Amsterdam Schiphol has a rooftop garden, a park with real grass, trees, and a windmill sitting above the terminal. You can walk your dog there in a designated area before a flight. Real grass, corn, growing on top of an airport.
Schiphol's whole approach is interesting because they've leaned into the Dutch thing, the windmill, the green space, but it's also functional. You can take a dog up there. There's seating. You can look out over the runways. It's a park that happens to be on a roof, and the roof happens to be an airport terminal.
And the grass is real. I keep coming back to that. Maintaining a lawn on top of a building that's subject to jet fuel particulates and the constant vibration of aircraft, that's a landscaping challenge I don't think most people appreciate.
The groundskeeping budget at Schiphol must have a line item that just says roof grass, ongoing battle against physics.
Number 2. Munich Airport has a 24-hour museum airside. Rotating exhibitions, everything from vintage aircraft to contemporary art, free for passengers. It's not a display case in a corridor. It's a dedicated museum space with curated shows that change regularly.
A museum inside an airport is such a strange idea because museums are places you go to deliberately. You plan a museum visit. Nobody plans to visit the Munich Airport Museum. You just find yourself there because your connection is 3 hours and you've already eaten. And yet there it is, with actual curation, actual exhibitions, probably an actual budget.
And it's free. That's the part that gets me. Museums charge admission. Airport museums don't. The economics are completely inverted. The museum exists to keep you in the terminal spending money elsewhere, so the museum itself doesn't need to break even. It's a loss leader for pretzel sales.
And this is where we cross from strange into surreal. Hong Kong International Airport, Terminal 2. A full-scale replica of a 1920s Hong Kong street. It's called the Hong Kong Street. Shops, a tea house, a rickshaw. Designed to evoke a past that never existed in quite that form.
This is the one that makes my brain do a full reset. You're in one of the most modern airports in the world, a building that's practically a spaceship, and inside it there's a street from the 1920s. Cobblestones. Awnings. A tea house where you can sit and drink tea while your flight to Tokyo boards in 40 minutes.
It's not even a real street that was preserved. It's a replica. A recreation of something that never was, built inside a terminal that processes millions of passengers a year, and the whole thing is designed to make you feel like you've stepped into old Hong Kong while you are, in fact, still inside a climate-controlled transit hub waiting for gate 47.
The rickshaw is the detail I can't get past. There's a rickshaw. It's not functional, you can't ride it, but it's there as decoration inside an airport. Someone in a meeting said we should have a rickshaw, and everyone nodded, and now there's a rickshaw.
And that's the list. A swimming pool, a butterfly garden, an ice rink, an indoor forest, a yoga room, a movie theater, a bowling alley, a rooftop park, a museum, and a fake street. But the list is only half the story. The real question is, why do airports build these things?
The straightforward answer is economics. Airports make money two ways. Aeronautical revenue, which is landing fees and gate charges, and non-aeronautical revenue, which is retail, food and beverage, parking, and so on. The non-aeronautical side has been growing as a share of airport income for years. And the key driver of retail revenue is dwell time. The longer people spend in the terminal, the more they spend. So if you can build something that makes a passenger think, I'll go through security early so I can see the butterfly garden, you've just bought yourself an extra hour of that passenger spending window.
So the butterfly garden is a retail strategy. That's the unromantic answer.
It's both. It's a retail strategy and it's genuine placemaking. Airports have a problem that urban planners call the non-place problem. A non-place is a space that people pass through but don't inhabit. Highways, hotel lobbies, waiting rooms. Airports are the ultimate non-places. They're designed for movement, not dwelling. But when you force people to dwell in a non-place for hours, you create a kind of psychological friction. People get restless, anxious, bored. So airports have been trying to solve that by becoming places, actual destinations with identity and texture.
And the strangest facilities are the ones that overcorrect. A yoga room is a reasonable response to the problem. A full-scale replica of a 1920s street is something else entirely. That's an airport saying, we're not just going to make this space tolerable, we're going to make it memorable. We're going to make it weird.
The fake street is the clearest example of what's actually happening here. It's not about utility. Nobody needs a rickshaw to catch a flight. It's about identity, giving the airport a sense of place that distinguishes it from every other glass and steel terminal in the world. Hong Kong International could have built another row of duty-free shops. Instead, they built a street that doesn't exist, because the street tells a story, and the story makes you feel something, and the feeling makes you spend money, and also maybe choose Hong Kong as your connection hub next time.
There's a knock-on effect here that I think is even more interesting. These facilities aren't just changing how passengers experience airports. They're changing what airports are. Changi's Jewel isn't just an airport amenity. It's a tourist destination. Locals go there on weekends. People book layovers in Singapore specifically to see the rain vortex. The airport has become a thing you visit, not just a thing you pass through.
Incheon in Seoul is doing the same thing. They've got cultural performances, a Korean cultural center, traditional craft demonstrations. It's not just about killing time, it's about creating an experience that's worth seeking out. And that shifts the competitive landscape. Airlines already compete on routes and prices. Now airports are competing on butterfly gardens and bowling alleys.
But there's a dark side to this, and I want to sit with it for a minute. Not all of these facilities are equally accessible. The swimming pool at Changi charges a fee. The ice rink in Dubai is in Terminal 1, which is Emirates' terminal. If you're flying a budget carrier through Terminal 2, you're not getting near it. The jewel complex is landside, which means you need to clear immigration to access it properly, which you can't do if you're just transiting through on certain passport arrangements.
That's fair, and it connects to the VIP terminal phenomenon, the idea that airports are increasingly stratified by what you can pay for. But I think there's an important distinction. Many of the facilities we listed are free and open to all passengers. Portland's movie theater, SFO's yoga room, Munich's museum, Schiphol's rooftop garden. These aren't premium lounge exclusives, they're just there for anyone who finds them.
The movie theater is the best example. No fee, no velvet rope, no class distinction. You just walk in. That's an airport treating every passenger as someone whose time matters.
And that's the philosophical tension at the heart of all this. Airports are machines for processing people, and machines don't care about your experience. But the people who run airports have realized that making the machine more humane, or at least more interesting, is good business, so you get these strange hybrids. A butterfly garden is a humane gesture and a retail strategy and a branding exercise and a psychological intervention all at once. It's a theme park and its civic infrastructure, and it's a shopping mall and it's a transit hub. The categories have collapsed.
The cognitive dissonance is the product. That's what I keep coming back to. When you're in the butterfly garden at Changi, you're simultaneously in a tropical paradise and a security-controlled transit zone. You're looking at a butterfly and hearing a gate change announcement. The experience doesn't resolve into one thing. It stays fractured, and that's what makes it memorable.
Does a butterfly garden make a layover better, or does it just make the wait more surreal?
I think the answer is both, and I think that's the point.
The surreal part is underrated. There's something about being in an airport at hour 5 of a layover where your grip on normal reality starts to slip anyway. Time zones are scrambled, you're not sure what meal you're supposed to be eating, the lighting is the same at noon and midnight, and then you walk past a rickshaw, or a bowling alley, or an indoor waterfall. And for a moment you're not sure if you're hallucinating.
The airport becomes a dream logic space, and these facilities lean into that instead of fighting it.
Before we wrap, Hilbert's been making faces, and I think he has a story to tell.
I worked nights at a regional airport in the 90s. Janitor. The airport had one amenity. They called it the quiet room.
The quiet room.
It was a converted storage closet. They put a chair in it and hung a sign on the door that said, quiet room. That was the whole project.
Was it quiet?
It was next to the baggage carousel. The wall wasn't soundproofed. It was the loudest room in the terminal. Every 90 seconds, the carousel alarm would go off, and the whole room would shake.
So it was a storage closet with a chair, next to a baggage carousel with no soundproofing, and they called it the quiet room.
The sign was laminated.
Well, that changes everything.
I cleaned it every night. Nobody ever used it. I'd find the chair moved maybe twice a year. Once someone left the magazine. That was the busiest it ever got.
What was the magazine?
In-Flight Retail. June 94.
Of course it was.
The thing about all these fancy airport amenities you listed, the pools, the butterfly gardens, the fake streets, is that someone has to maintain them. Someone's cleaning the ice rink at 3 in the morning. Someone's feeding the butterflies. Someone's resurfacing the bowling lane. And those people aren't on layover. They're there every night in the empty terminal, dealing with the strangeness full time.
The night shift at the butterfly garden. That's a job. Someone has that job.
I take the quiet room over the butterfly garden. At least the quiet room was honest. It was a closet with a chair. It didn't pretend to be anything else. These new airports, they're building entire fake worlds and pretending they're not still just places where people wait to leave.
But isn't that the whole endeavor of architecture? Making spaces that feel like something even though they're fundamentally functional?
Architecture doesn't have a laminated sign that says quiet room on a room that's not quiet.
He's got you there.
I'm not saying the butterfly garden is bad. I'm saying the strangest thing about airports isn't the amenities. It's that we keep trying to make them feel like home, and they never will. And that's fine. You don't need a forest to survive a layover. You need a chair and somewhere to charge your phone. The rest is decoration.
The quiet room was decoration too. Just bad decoration.
It was honest decoration.
You sound almost fond of it.
I spent 4 years cleaning a room nobody used. You develop a relationship with the space.
Did you ever sit in the chair?
Once. The carousel alarm went off. I got up and left.
If you take one thing from this episode, it's that airports are building these strange facilities because they're trying to solve a problem that can't really be solved. The problem of being stuck somewhere you don't want to be, waiting. And the attempts to solve it are sometimes beautiful, sometimes absurd, and sometimes a storage closet with a laminated sign.
And the fact that they work at all, that a butterfly garden actually does make a layover better, that a fake street actually does make you feel something, is maybe the strangest thing of all.
What happens when airports become destinations in themselves? Will we start choosing connections based on the bowling alley? Are we heading toward a world where the layover is the point and the flight is just the thing you endure to get there?
Some people already do that. There are travel bloggers who route through Changi specifically for the jewel. The airport has become the attraction. That's not the future. It's already happening.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, who apparently spent the 90s in a storage closet with a laminated sign.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you've got a weird prompt, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon. Try not to book a layover just for the rink.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.